Every now and then, we really get lucky. Peggy does such a good job. I've got Peggy Tuck with me this morning.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Mike.
And she just gets the greatest guest, and we have the greatest guest with us today. In fact, he is a member of a family that's really been influential in my career my whole life in this business. I've been a subscriber to Forbes magazine ever since I've been in the business. In fact, one of the first books that I ever bought was the book called Thoughts on Business, on the Business of Life by Malcolm Forbes. And we have with us this morning Mr. Steve Forbes, Chairman and Editor-in-Chief of Forbes Media. By the way, those of you, now I highly recommend, you've heard me say this before, I highly recommend that you get a subscription to Forbes, which is the nation's leading business magazine. But I don't think you're aware, I wasn't at least until recently, of all the areas in which you can interface with the Forbes group. One with Forbes Life, which is a dedicated luxury and lifestyle magazine. They've got Forbes Asia. They've got Forbes Investment Advisory Institute. And then they got several websites, Forbes.com, ForbesWomen.com, Real Clear Politics, Real Clear Markets, Real Clear Sports, and RealClearWorld.com. This man is a busy man. Good morning, Mr. Forbes.
Good morning, Mike. Thank you.
I don't know how you keep up with all that. So that's just amazing. And you and your family have been a tremendous influence in my life and those of the investors around the world. And on behalf of all of us, I want to start out by thanking you. I don't know where to begin. I kind of did my research. There's all kinds of places I wanted to go, but I think based upon what the Australian government, what I read yesterday, I think I have to start there because you wrote an article not long ago, Why a Cyprus-like Seizure of Your Money Could Happen Here, and I was very alarmed at what Cyprus did. And I see a headline today that says Australian government set to seize money from citizen bank accounts. What's going on here?
Well, what happened in Cyprus was it set the precedent that politicians hungry for money will go where money is. And money is in your bank accounts. Money is in your retirement accounts. Argentina several years ago seized people's equivalent of 401ks and stole it. And you're starting to see it here. You see it in the proposal of the president to limit what you can have in your 401k. Now, where did that authority come from? Where did the government decide how much you can have in your retirement? And that's just the beginning. That's just the foot in the door of being able to get their hands on more or control more and more of what you thought was your own money.
You know, a couple of years ago when we had the option to convert to a 401k, to a Roth IRA, I actually did that, and my accountant talked me out of it and told me to reverse it because he says one of these days they're just going to turn around and tax that Roth just like everything else. Do you think that's a possibility that they turn around and say, we said that it was going to be tax-free forever, but we changed our mind?
They'll do something like that if we let them get away with it. And the precedent for it is Social Security. As you know, during your lifetime, you pay your Social Security taxes on after-tax income. And the deal was, okay, you pay twice on that income. But when you draw benefits when you retire, the money's supposed to be tax-free. Well, years ago, that went out the window. You meet certain thresholds, and they tax your Social Security benefits. So they'll do the same thing or try to do the same thing with Roth IRAs. They'll try to means test them. They'll try to say, the money grew tax-free and therefore the government had to go without and had to pay interest on bonds and blah, 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 and find a way to put a levy on what you saved up.
Now, the most...
By the way...
I'm sorry, yes, go ahead,
On normal IRAs, let's not forget that even though you get to put it in tax-free, you pay income tax even on capital gains when you pull that money out of your IRA. So the government already has this clause in it, but that's not going to stop them from trying to do more.
Yeah, and so I'm not a big Roth conversion advocate because of all that. Now, the most recent attempt, or the current attempt, I guess, I think to, as I think you put, pickpocket taxpayers, really has to do with this Obama budget. The headline in The Atlantic this morning says Obama's budget would lead to the highest federal tax rate in four decades.
Well, that's what? Right. And, you know, he wasn't satisfied with what he got in January. Now he wants to put on the so-called Buffett tax, remove other deductions, and all that does is destroy capital and hinders investment. And one thing this White House, and it's true of a lot of economists, never recognize is you don't get a higher standard of living without investing.
Yep, absolutely. So what is it, you know, what does the average citizen do? I mean, I really think, and I talked to a lot of people, Steve, and they just feel disenfranchised. I think a lot of people don't vote, which they should, but they don't because they don't think it makes any difference. They think that when people get to Washington, D.C., they pretty much do whatever they want to do. They vote in whatever direction they want to vote, whatever works best for them. And there's so many, you know, you take a very simple bill, for instance, and they attach so many things on it. It looks like barnacles on a ship. What would be the suggestion you would make to the average person, the average investor listening today? What kind of impact can they have?
Well, one of the things they can do in addition to getting information is start getting in contact with their representatives. Now, that's the glories of email, and start getting in contact, too, with like-minded people. You know, we have a thing called primaries in this country, and we saw it in 2010. Numerous incumbents were thrown out of office. Some were thrown out in 2012, not enough. But you're going to see it again in 2014. And so Jefferson was right. Eternal vigilance is the price of liberty. And so if our representatives know that we are watching them, and if they go along or don't stop this kind of nonsense, they will be challenged.
Now, it seems like the banks are really being hampered now by the Federal Reserve. You wrote a great article, in fact, called "The Fed Playing Thug Politics with Banks." What's going on there? I mean, because it seems like if you need a loan, you can't get it. And banks seem to be taking all that money from the Fed, just sitting on it, and really not helping the average man on the street. In fact, I attended a meeting last night of some business owners, and they were complaining about how difficult it was for them to get simple loans for orders that they already had. They can't get the financing that they need.
Well, the flow of credit to the smaller businesses, unincorporated businesses and households, is very, very uncertain these days. And a critical factor is regulation. The regulators have no problem if you go and buy Greek bonds or U.S. government bonds, which yield nothing, next to nothing. But if you make a loan to a small business, the regulators get very antsy about it. So you have to paper it over six ways to Sunday. And so the regulatory barriers, it's beginning to ease a little bit, but not enough, is a huge reason why job creation has not been what it has been in past recoveries. Because, as you know, most of the job creation comes from smaller businesses, and they're the ones who are hurt. And this Federal Reserve policy of zero interest rates, it's like the old Soviet Union, where they said the health care is free, but you can't get any. And the money has no price, but to try getting some. Unless you're a big entity, it's tough.
The health care is free, but you can't get any. That's amazing. Listen, okay, now I've done my politics. When we come back, if you'll just stay with us, Mr. Forbes, for just one more segment. When we come back, folks, we're going to talk to Steve Forbes about what his thoughts are on gold, farmland, and the investment world. So if you'll stay with us, be back in just a moment. You're listening to Straight Talk Money. Good morning, folks. We are fortunate today to have with us Mr. Steve Forbes, Chairman and Editor-in-Chief of Forbes Media, and someone who needs no further introduction. We're going to go very quickly to a caller before we get into some of the topics I want to talk about in this segment. We've got Bill on the line. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Steve. I'm a big fan. Thank you so much. This idea of the government seizing money, don't you think that would set off a second rebellion and cause secession? And I mean, I think back to the Stamp Act when citizens actually stormed the houses of politicians, and we are armed citizens, and I think that's probably the offset to what they might try to do. I thought you have a comment.
I don't think they could do a thing as overt as Cyprus, certainly not under the conditions today. They would have to wait for a real emergency to try something like that. But they're going to, I think, try to do little pickings of things like they've already done on Social Security, putting taxes on when they promised not to do so, trying to restrict how much you can have in your 401k, as the president proposed in his budget, how much you can put in after you reach a certain threshold, and things like that. And so like little mice or rats just nibbling away, they're going to, they may not get the big pound of cheese, but they're going to try to find little things they can keep nipping at. And so we just got to smack them down every time they try it.
Yep. Yeah, and that's exactly what we have to do. Thank you for calling, Bill. We appreciate it. Thank you. All right, I'd like to move on because I'd like to cover a couple of topics very quickly. I guess question for you, inflation or deflation? What do you think we've got going on here? I've seen good arguments on both sides.
Well, right now what the Fed has done is a neat trick. It's not been done before. They printed up all of this money, QE, and I was in Britain a few months ago and was reminded that QE in Britain stands for Queen Elizabeth. Therefore, this person suggested instead of calling these money printing exercises QEs, he said you should call them Titanic. Titanic 1, Titanic 2, Titanic 3. what the Fed has done is they print up the money, and then they induce the banks to give it back to the Fed for a little bit of interest. The banks don't mind because it's found money. They get to increase their profits. And so the money is not put to work. We chatted earlier about how regulators jump on you when you make a business loan. So even though loans have gone up a bit, it hasn't gone up nearly enough. And a lot of expansion that could have taken place isn't taking place. So what we have here is the Fed has created this vast reservoir of money, trillions of dollars, and the dam is shaky. And we just better watch out when that dam breaks if they don't drain that reservoir. So Ben says he's printing up money, and then like Scrooge McDuck, he puts it in his money bin, and it doesn't go to work.
That's right.
It's strange.
Yeah, it very is. The whole thing is strange, and it constantly amazes me because when they're asked by media and interviews what's going to happen at the end of this, they seem to have no idea. So let's just hope
it works out. This is uncharted territory, and that's one reason why you're getting huge volatility, even more than normal, in commodities, because people felt, especially in 2011, that all this money would mean a traditional inflation. And instead, those positions are being unwound down now. What it has done is distort the credit markets and hurt smaller businesses. By the way, those who say we haven't had much inflation in the last 10 years, we never would have had a housing bubble if the Fed hadn't printed all that money up in the early part of the last decade.
Right.
So we've already had a disaster from what the Fed has done.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. They've messed with our economy many, many times and actually created more harm than good. So, and I think that's the fear of a lot of people now, that these QEs are eventually going to cause more harm than good. And so that kind of gets
economic
us...
Economic malpractice.
Yeah, that kind of gets me when you mentioned commodities to something. You spoke with Steve Romick not long ago, and the title of your interview, I think, was Trade into Gold... The gold you can eat, farmland, but I want to talk about both. First of all, what are your thoughts on gold? It's plunged recently. Everybody thought it was a safe haven. There's all kinds of conspiracy theorists. The gold people are like the apple people. You know, it becomes a cult with both of them. What is going on with gold out there?
Well, what was going on is that all of this money been printed up and Bernanke printed up. Has been dammed up in that reservoir, and so gold was run up, especially in 2011, in anticipation that this would mean a huge burst of another bubble upward in gold and other commodities. And because Ben has dammed the money up, it hasn't happened. So a lot of people borrowed, speculating in gold, and now they're having to wind it down. But gold should be bought. Not so much as an investment, as an insurance policy. So if you have some, just hold on to it. You must never underestimate the stupidity of modern central bankers. sell it out.
You know, Steve, you also talk about farmland, and I know when Jim Rogers was on with us, you know, I mean, he's an advocate of farmland, and even like 5 years ago, I spoke with Dr. Arthur Laffer, and he was buying up land, and that was a big thing for him as well.
Well, what we have here is what happens when you make the dollar unstable. It's like putting a virus in a computer. It corrupts the information. And so people do go into hard assets when the dollar is unstable. And hence, we've had a huge run-up in farmland in recent years. And the thing is, you don't know how much of that is real supply and demand and how much of that is just hedging against a weak dollar. And we saw this in the 1970s. Farmland zoomed up in value, then crashed in the 80s. So my advice is be very, very careful on those things. If you like farmland, buy it because you want to keep it. And don't leverage to buy it. Don't borrow to buy it. Because this is a very unstable environment.
Yeah, I grew up in the early stages of my life on a farm, and you can't rely. It doesn't go up every year, and farming can be a very tough business, and it's become so institutionalized, it's very difficult for the average farmer to even compete. Do you think that basically, you know, one of the arguments that's given about investing in the United States and that how others are continuing to invest in the United States and why the stock market is continuing to do as well as it has, is that we're just simply the best house in a bad neighborhood. Are we the best house in a bad neighborhood?
We are indeed. And I compare it to a car on a highway. We're going about 40. We should be going 70 or 80, and everyone else is going 10. So we look like we're NASCAR, but we're not. We're still in barely getting out of second gear.
Well, you're not only a businessman, but you're very well politically connected. You've got a lot of its life experience. Can I ask you what concerns you the most as you look out on the landscape of both politics and business? What is the one thing that really is a concern to you?
Well, one thing that inspires me is there's still a lot of entrepreneurial energy in this country. If we ever get a semi-stable environment, you're going to see that burst forward in a very positive way, just as we saw in the 80s and 90s. And what worries me is that our economic leaders just don't know what they're doing. It's like flying an airplane and you're really not quite sure how to do it. And we did this in the 1970s, and it wasn't a pleasant time. But I'm convinced that in 2014, especially 2016, you're going to see drastic changes. You find candidates like Ron Paul, who's going to run for president. He's coming out with a flat tax proposal, and you're going to see some good ideas starting to be floated out there, and I think that's going to set the stage for real reform after 2016.
Well, like you said a little earlier, liberty requires vigilance, according to Thomas Jefferson. We so much appreciate you being with us, Mr. Forbes. Thank you for taking the time from your busy schedule today.